Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of the Dr. Will Show, where I interview educators and entrepreneurs on leveling up. Each episode, I zoom in someone who's dope, and we just sit back and have a conversation on what it means to live your best life. Now, if this is your first time checking out the podcast, this is the Mobile University for Entrepreneurs, and I am your host, Dr. Will. I am recording this episode fresh off the first week of school. So it has been, wow, it has been a week, people. You know how it is when you do that first week and you are just tired. And I've been going to bed like 8:30, 9 o'clock every night and going to sleep, not even intending on going to sleep. Just I'm laying in bed. I'm watching something, and the next thing I know, I'm waking up, it's 12 o'clock, and I'm like, well, hey, I might as well go back to sleep. So it's been tiring, but we're here trying to, again, as always, put together some episodes, some content for educators to get them thinking about their lives in a different way and creating a life for themselves that they don't need a vacation for, right? They're not looking at that school calendar, just sort of marking off the days like, okay, this is when this fall break coming up. This is when this break is coming up, but a life that is fulfilled. And so today's guest is Kathy Fernandez, who has just recently, I guess, decided it is time for her to become an educator entrepreneur. And I wanted to bring her on because if you're a fan of this podcast, so many of the educators who come on the show have been doing this for some time, right? And so you're hearing that perspective of, I'm doing this, I've been doing this, and this is great. And all of that is awesome. But what happens if you're new, when you're just starting out? What are your feelings about that? What are the support do you have, are you looking for, or that you need? And how do you figure this whole thing out from the onset? And this is what I'm going to be talking about with Kathy. So for those who be listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Stitcher, Spotify, and Audible, will you please introduce yourself, Kathy?
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show. So my name is Kathy Fernandez. I've been an educator for 20 years. I am from the Greater Toronto Area, so up here in Canada. We're also very hot today. I've been a classroom teacher. I've been a guidance counselor. I've worked in special education. I've worked with English language learners. I've been a mentor to new teachers as well as student teachers. And I've also been doing a lot of curriculum writing courses, professional development for educators. So that's me in a nutshell.
All right. So I'm always curious as to how people got to where they are. What did you think you would be doing when you were growing up? And how did you find yourself in K-12 education?
So I think throughout my childhood, there was always elements of me wanting to be a teacher. I remember my mom would attend English classes at night school, and I would go with her sometimes. And I just remember the teacher was so great. She would give me papers and things and I would start, you know, writing questions for my classmates and doing activities, and she would photocopy them for me. And then I'd take them to school and give them out and mark them. And, you know, I just remember thinking, oh, this is fun. This is what I want to be. But the older I got, you know, my dad sort of taught me out of teaching because he said, you know, go into business, go into something that's, you know, pays better. And I didn't really want to go into business. So I thought, I'll go into healthcare. So I actually majored in kinesiology and health studies, and I thought, oh, I want to be a physiotherapist. And throughout university, I did some volunteer work in clinics, and I was like, this is not what I want to do. And at the time, during university, I was also working as part-time as a personal trainer. And one of my clients was a teacher, and she was like, you know, I was telling her how I didn't really want to be a physiotherapist anymore. And she said, well, you'd make a great teacher. Like, have you thought about that? And I said, well, I had off and on, but it just wasn't something that I don't know. I think I just still had it in my head that that wasn't the career. So she, you know, she invited me to come to her classroom and another teacher's classroom learn there, do some volunteer work. And that's when I realized, yep, this is exactly what I want to do. So after I graduated, I applied to Teachers College, and I've been here for 20 years now.
All right. So you just talked about how you took a different, I guess, route to becoming a teacher. I want to throw this out there to you because you are in another country. What is, if you could sort of give us an idea of what K through 12 education is like in Canada. And I understand that, you know, Canada, like the United States, has different parts of the country that have their own mores and languages and cultures, et cetera. But for those who are listening to this podcast from the United States and have no idea what goes on in Canada, give us an idea, I guess, in Ontario, where you're from, what does K through 12 education look like?
Well, one of the things that that I learned that's different with Canadian education is that we are actually governed provincially. So every province has their own Ministry of Education. So education is not done nationally, it's done provincially. So every province has their own Ministry of Education, has their own curriculum. For the most part, the curriculum seems to be fairly similar, but we do have our Ontario curriculum. So even though I'm a teacher from Ontario, I would still need to be certified to teach in a different province. I wouldn't be able to necessarily go and teach somewhere else right away. There would have to be a lot of processes through that. K-12 education has been, you know, I'm looking at the news and I've been reading things on social media with regards to education and the teacher shortages, especially during COVID. And so I'm noticing a lot of that stuff is very similar right now. There's definitely been, you know, we're in a space in education right now where teachers are overwhelmed. So it's no different than what I'm seeing in the States. It can be a lot of work, and the pandemic has definitely exasperated things, right? And instead of focusing on improving education, you know, you're putting in bodies in classrooms, right? And so that's been very tough. It could be very demoralizing when you've put so much time and effort in your degree, in your learning, and perhaps you're not feeling as respected. So those are some of the similarities right now that I'm noticing across the board, I think, right?
That's all right. I know one of the things, I was thinking about this morning, is in the United States, because of high stake testing, we have created a system that looks at the deficits of students. All we're talking about is what they can't do and what they're not doing and how they're not measuring up to this baseline score that someone has arbitrarily decided this is the score that all kids should be at. And we're not looking at what students are doing well. We're not asking students about their interests, their passions. We don't know their skills and talents, and we're not cultivating those interests, those skills, those talents, because I don't know why, but the reality is you can only bolster your weaknesses so much, period. Where your greatest growth will come is with your strengths and with your talents and how you're able to leverage those. And we have a system that is backwards, because we're not looking at those. We're not getting kids to look at what are you good at and what can you do well in and how can we help you maximize your potential. And there are schools who are doing that. There are teachers who are doing that. But I'm just saying across the board, the system, because of high stake testing, this is where we find ourselves at. And I'm just wondering, are we going to change that system? Or are we going to just continue to just say, oh, you didn't score this test, make the score on this test, so this is what we're going to be talking about in team meetings, and this is what this is how a school is going to be graded because certain kids are not hitting these scores, and making kids feel like I'm not good enough, or making kids feel like, you know, I'm not this or I'm not that. And people are forgetting that when you go to college, if you're not good in math, guess what? You're not going to be majoring in. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one's going to be like, you know what? I am terrible at algebra, so I'm going to go try to major in math. It's not going to happen. And so I don't know why we do this in K-12. Just like, I know we're digressing from this conversation, but it's just one of those things to where it's like, when I'm looking at K-12, this is what I'm seeing. And I'm just wondering if we're going to ever do anything about it.
Oh, that is such a good question. And I've asked this so many times, right? Because it's so archaic, I think, in so many areas that we're thinking about. And we have to think about what is the purpose of education, right? Way back, we were training people to go to the workforce, right? Of course, we're still doing this. People need to make a living. We understand that. But it's more about just developing these skills, right? It's about learning. What is it that students are actually learning? Like you said, what is it that they're passionate about? And how do we focus on what they're good at and how they can actually make a living doing that, right? And I think the testing, it hinders all of that. You know, we have this right, you know, in Ontario, our standardized testing is done in grade 3, grade 6, grade 9, and 10. And it takes up so much time. It stresses out the students. And at the end of the day, there's nothing from those tests that the classroom teachers don't already know about their students, right? And a lot of times these scores come out and they are, you know, real estate companies are posting these and saying, oh, come to this school district or this school because they've got high test scores, right? And now you're talking about real estate values when you're not looking at all the variables that allow some schools to score high and score low, right? There's so many other factors that are important. And I agree with you. I feel like sometimes we're going backwards instead of forwards, and we're fighting against what we know, what we've seen in research, that standardized scores don't actually improve education or learning. Yet for some reason, this is what the leaders tend to focus on, because perhaps it's easy for them, as opposed to, you know, giving back a bit of the professional knowledge and professional understanding that teachers and educators have at the school level. So I'm 100% agreeing with you. It's an uphill battle, that's for sure.
So you are a new entrepreneur. I've just fell into this thing. It wasn't a conscious decision. At some point it was, but it wasn't initially a conscious decision for me to do this. I didn't have the intention to do this. I had just been presenting at all of these conferences, making a name for myself, garnering a reputation. And then someone asked me, do you do this? And I was like, yes. And once we had more discussions, and it was, oh, send me an invoice. And I did that. And I did the work. And I was like, okay, this wasn't that difficult. And I got the first check. I was like, oh, okay, now we can do this. And that's sort of how everything sort of started for me. Tell me about your journey on getting to the point to where you decided I wanted to monetize my knowledge, my skills, my experiences as an educator, and to make an impact outside of the four walls of my school.
Well, kind of the same thing. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But I didn't know in what capacity, in what way. And I, you know, as a teacher here in Ontario, we actually retire quite early. And, you know, I came to this realization, which was a bit scary and daunting, is that, you know, my retirement is less than 10 years away. And I can't imagine not working at such a young age, right? And I don't want to go into administration. That is definitely not an area that I enjoy. I don't want to continue teaching after I retire. Because that's a long time. And I don't want to be that, you know, grumpy teacher who probably should have retired years ago, right? So I was just thinking about, what is it that I can do? And initially, I actually had a different online retail business not too long ago. But I had finished my master's, you know, just a few years ago. That was like 14 years into teaching. And I thought, I really want to be able to do something with this. You know, I put my time and effort into it. Sorry about that. I wanted to use what I learned. My master's was in teaching and learning. And last summer, I thought, okay, I'm going to use the summer. I'm going to focus on figuring out what I want to do in education. But I was doing so many writing jobs. I was trying to figure out my online business for the retail. And one day my daughter said to me, "You're a workaholic, Mom." And that gave me pause. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing too much. I really need to think about what it is that I want to do. And so I thought, I need to focus on teaching and learning. This is my passion. This is what I wanted to do. And initially I thought, okay, because I've joined a lot of groups, both of them business and others, you know, for entrepreneurs. And, you know, in speaking with them, I was able to sort of hone in on, you know, perhaps coaching or creating courses. But one time during the school year, we were doing professional development. And I was talking to my colleagues and I was thinking, you know, we do this professional development. We leave sometimes feeling really inspired to change and make changes in our classroom practices and things like that. But there's never a follow-up. There's never a follow-through. There's never going back and saying, okay, what progress have I made? It's just a one and done. And that's where I kind of came up with this guided teacher planner, in that it's there to prompt teachers on a weekly basis, focusing on the things that we learn in professional development, right? But on a weekly basis, thinking back to what it is that we want to focus on. It's the learner. It's us improving our practice to help the student, the learner, right? And so that's kind of how it kind of went. That's kind of how I got to this point here.
Mm. So how did you start developing your planner? What went into creating the content?
Well, I wanted to think about what I thought was important when it comes to teaching, right? It's knowing who our learners are, knowing how they learn, the relationships that we're forming with them, and how we accomplish those things. And so I was kind of thinking about what's important, right? So I was looking at that. We're looking at the learner, you know, thinking about focusing on universal design for learning and differentiating instruction. And that's sort of our how, right? But sometimes we don't think about that. We think about, I got to get some work done. I got to teach this and that's it. But not thinking about how we're going to engage students and how we're going to meet the needs of all those learners. So I thought, if we have that at the forefront in the planner, then it's something that teachers have to constantly look at, right? And that goes along with social and emotional learning, right? That goes along with 21st century skills, right? Collaboration, all of those things that sometimes we do those without thinking, right? It's part of our practice. But other times we need that reminder that all of these components are part of learning, right? We don't just learn them in childhood. These are skills that we're going to have in adulthood, right? So it's something that we're constantly growing with. So it was having that. And then the other thing for me is all about building relationships with students, right? So I put an area in there for student check-in. So, you need to write down a couple of students you're going to check in with that week, because as educators, we know that sometimes there are certain students that take up most of our time. And then there's other students that fall under the radar, right? And so if we purposely, consciously write these students' names down, we're going to focus on them, right? Doesn't mean we ignore everybody else, but we're going to focus on them. And it could be, you know, just getting to know them a little bit more. Or it could be like, maybe they're, you notice they're struggling in something, so I'm going to really focus and help them with that. Or maybe they need to extend their learning because perhaps they're bored, right? So ensuring that we're doing that. And then I've also put sunshine calls, right? Because a lot of times, the only time a parent or a family member will hear about their child is if something has gone wrong in school, right? And so if right from the beginning, we pick a few families to connect with that week, quick check-in, just a quick, you know, your child did this in school, this was great, this is what we're doing to help them. And if you do that a little bit every week, it's not as overwhelming, it's not as daunting. You're building those relationships with families that in the end make your life as a teacher better, right? Because when there is a problem, when there is something that needs to be resolved, you've built that relationship already. So it's going away, as opposed to, you know, you being on the defensive as an educator, right? And then I think the last thing for me was just being reflective, because that's how we learn, right? So you have the glow and grow section in there where it really tells teachers, okay, what did you do this week that was really good? What worked really well? What are some things you want to change, right? What are your next steps to improve? And then I've created two reflective questions each week. So I came up with 52 weeks worth of reflection questions that focus on teaching and learning. And as I was writing those questions, I realized these are really good interview questions, right? So if a teacher at the end of the year can look back at all the learning they've done, they pretty much have a portfolio here, and they're ready to go into an interview and speak to it. I actually have examples on how they were able to learn, how they were able to adjust their practice to meet the needs of the learners, and they'd have something specific. Now, that wasn't the goal of my teacher plan initially, but after writing all these questions, I was like, wow, if you can actually fill these in every week, or even think about them. You're doing jot notes, right? You're not writing a whole essay, but it really helps you and show others, if you're looking for a job, that, you know what, I'm actually invested in this. So that's kind of how it came about. And at first I created a digital version of it. And then I learned that I could publish a paperback version through Amazon. So I did that. And then with another printing company, I was able to get like a spiral bound version. So I've got a few different versions going of this planner, depending on how teachers like to work.
Wow, that is amazing. So how did you figure out your niche, right? Because there are educators, much like businesses, that try to do like everything. Right. Like one of the reasons GM, which is a car manufacturer, they had so many problems is that they had so many vehicles. And because they own so many brands, all those brands had all these different vehicles. And you're talking about, I'm paying for R&D. I'm paying for people to design these cars. I'm paying for these cars to be manufactured. And then these cars need to be shipped out everywhere. And if you're not, you know, these things are not rolling off the lot, you're bleeding money. And then educators may not be bleeding money, but you might not be getting jobs when you go to their website and it says we offer, and you look at like 9 things, and none of those 9 things are connected in any way. And you go, all right. Now, I don't know if they're making money. They could be. I'm not in their pockets. But right. The rule is to find that sort of one thing that you do well, that one thing that you work towards to solve a problem. And from that, maybe you can find different offshoots, but everything must go back to that one thing. And what you're doing, it sounds like very much centered on teacher reflection. How did you get to that point to say, because I know you mentioned how you've been in these groups, which is awesome. So we definitely got to get into that. But for you to say, this is going to be what I'm going to do versus maybe I'm going to hit the road, which you still could hit the road and do consulting or write a book, which you still could write a book. But this is the thing that I'm going to do. How did you get there?
it really came about working with teachers, right? And seeing, you know, of course, there was the pandemic, but even pre-pandemic, seeing what the because I worked to support teachers, I worked to support the students in their class. So I was able to be in a lot of different classrooms. And I just saw the overwhelm sometimes with some of the teachers. And a lot of times the overwhelm was on things that just were not focused on the learner. There were so many other things that were taking up teachers' time and that was causing them this overwhelm. And, you know, it was in speaking with them and saying, you know, you don't have to actually waste your time doing this. There are other ways to be productive. There are other ways to, you know, get to the learner and get to the learning, right? And so that's when I was like, it's important to really sit back and reflect. What is it that I'm doing that's causing me so much stress? Is it me, you know, constantly being at the photocopier, photocopying things? Is it me taking all these assignments that I need to go home and mark, right? You're putting all this work on yourself that isn't necessarily the best practice. You can find other ways to engage students without that worksheet. No student has ever said, yay, another worksheet, right? So taking things from a worksheet that they had and saying, let's look at some of the questions you have here. How can we take these questions and make them more interactive? How can we get kids to stand up and walk around and do things around the classroom that still addresses questions that you have on that worksheet? It's way more engaging. One or two questions could take up a whole lesson as opposed to 25 questions on a sheet that some kids will might never finish or some kids will whip right through, right? So you're not engaging them. And then taking things home. Why are you taking these things home? Is there a different way that you can assess in the classroom, right? Assessment isn't just about a final product. Assessment is the conversations you hear children having amongst themselves with you, what you observe them doing in the classroom, how they learn, how they show their learning, all of those things are part of assessment. Because at the end of the day, teachers are stressed because they have reporting to do, they have grades to do. But it's just the manner in which that you do them and not just focusing on covering the curriculum. And I'm putting those in quotations because so many times there's this pressure of covering the curriculum. Well, you can look at your curriculum and see how can I address many areas of different parts, subject areas, and make it cohesive in a way that is, you know, more engaging for students. And you're not, and you're still going to get a grade at the end of the day. And most often, if you do it well, the students will already know their grades before those report cards come in, because you will have constantly spoken to them. You'll constantly give them feedback on an ongoing basis, as opposed to taking something home, writing down a million comments with a letter grade on it. You know the student is not going to look at anything but that letter grade, right? I actually stopped putting grades on things and just putting comments sometimes or speaking to a student, because when you focus on that, then they know what their next step is. They're not just, oh, I got a B, or how do I get an A, right? So it's all those things. And for me, it all just came back to being reflective, taking the time to sit back and actually reflect. And that's something you can instill in your students too, right? If they can think about their learning, if they can look at their peers' work and give really, you know, be critical of their work, but in a way that is productive, not like, oh, your handwriting's messy, but, you know, actually giving examples and showing, oh, you know what, this was a great writing piece. Maybe you need to have more descriptive language. When the students are able to reflect on their own work and others' work, you know that they're learning, right? So for me, it's all encompassing that you need to really sit back and be reflective. Take the time, because at the end of the day, if you put in the work to do the reflection, you're going to minimize the other type of work that you've been doing that takes up time and isn't productive. Mm.
So earlier you mentioned about being in groups and in circles of educators who are doing this work, which is extremely important for those who are interested in doing this. Like, because you mentioned how you had previous retail experience and with that type of business experience. Now, there are certain things like, you know, systems and accounting and things that are very useful that would carry over here. But when you are talking about creating products to sell to educators or working with educators within a school or school system, there's a whole lot that goes into play that the outside world, those experiences will not translate because they don't talk together and they don't make, right? They don't make sense. And so in what groups or individuals did you talk to? What books that you read, what resources that you found helpful for you to be successful in this space as an entrepreneur?
So the two things are the groups. So, you know, just looking online, I was able to find different groups that were either just educators or educators wanting to, you know, have a side hustle or, you know, looking into other parts of education, not just being in the classroom. So being part of those groups, and some of them are paid groups and some of them are free groups, right? And it takes a while to figure out you're getting the most benefit from, right? So speaking to a lot of the people in those communities, but I also still stuck with just business groups because there is that side that I didn't really understand a lot about when it comes to, you know, marketing and branding and selling and the accounting, all of those things, right? So I just connecting with those people and learning from them. To be honest, I don't read a lot of the books. I am one of those people, I love to go on walks. So for me, it's listening to a podcast. And so if it's not about the NBA, most of the podcasts are about education and business. So yours, there's a teacher career coach, there's always a lesson, EduCrush. So those are just some of the podcasts I like to listen to. And I love listening to different people's journeys, because even though it might not be the same area that I'm interested in, their journeys are just so interesting, right? And you learn something from everybody. So for me, that's been the biggest thing, is getting out there and just really connecting with other people.
So what has been an aha moment or a takeaway for you that you have learned about business that's been a game changer for you, or something that when you heard it and when it able to apply it, you said, ha ha, that's it.
It really has, and there's something about educators and teachers where I think we almost have this martyrdom about us. Like we're martyrs. We want to give everything away for free. We're giving people, that's just part of our nature, right? We just want to help. And the hardest part was thinking about monetizing this. Like, oh, why? Like, how am I going to monetize? Why should I do this? This kind of feels a bit cringy to be sort of charging other educators for something, right? And that took some time. And it was a lot of the business groups that I was in that helped me kind of look at that. Like, no, you have experience, you have knowledge, your time is worth something. Right? The time that you spend creating something, the time you spend speaking to somebody, all of that is worth something. And for some reason, there's almost this judgment with teachers, educators to do this. And I've come to the point where like, no, you know what, that's okay. And there are going to be people who will say, why are you charging for this? But I think I've realized that your time is valuable. And why shouldn't you be paid for this, right? Other industries would never offer their products and services for free. Why should you, right? It's not anything different. So for me, it was that change in mindset that it's okay. It's your time and it's your work.
Hey, that's what we do around here on my show, for real. I've talked about this a lot, and even on Twitter, and I've had my fair share of haters and people who've come after me because of that. But you can say that you love education all day. You can say that you are an educator born through and through, that you bleed for your students. You are everything. They are everything to you. But you get paid at work. How many, you know, for those who are so anti-monetization, I want to know how many of them would show up to their school district and still do that work if they didn't get a check.
Right.
Because you're not teaching for free.
No. And my education to teach was not for free either.
Yeah. So it's... That is the one. Now, I'm not in people's pockets, and I'm not one of those people who are saying, you know, you are less than if you don't do this, but at the very least, I want educators to think of themselves as a business of one, meaning that they take control over their career and that they don't fall victim to the profession in their school district. And what I mean by that, people, because all of us have been in situations where you're working and you're not happy, right? And instead of you continuing to go to work and you are like, I hate my school district, I hate my principal, I hate these kids or what have you, is do some work on yourself and find out what is the root cause of that unhappiness. And it may be that those are not the kids you need to work with, or it may be that is not the principal, that you and that principal just don't connect well, and you need to go to another school. It could be that school district does not value what you value, and you may need to go to another school district. But in doing that work, I want you to take control over your happiness, right? Your career, what brings you joy, and to figure out the best ways you can fulfill your mission as an educator and not feel like I got to be miserable every day I wake up. And so, you know, if you don't want to get into the game of selling, be in the game of maintaining yourself and make better choices for you. And that's at very least for those who listen to my podcast. If you don't want to do this, take upon these principles of entrepreneurship to become an intrapreneur, right? And then figure out what type of life I want to live and make sure that you're taking steps to get there. So you don't be one of those people where it's Monday morning and you're like, I do not want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. It's really important to, if you're not happy somewhere, to try something new. Within my first 5 years of teaching, I thought I was done. I was already looking at other things. But it took me, you know, changing where I was, right? Changing what I was doing to say, oh, there's more to this, right? There, you know, I was still in education. I was still, you know, but I was doing something different. And so, and I love teaching. I actually love my job. I actually, this year, I'm going back into the classroom because I wanted to, right? I've done so much in other areas, working with teachers, working with students, but I wanted to implement everything that I've learned. I actually do enjoy teaching. I don't want to leave it. I just have all of these other interests, right? I kind of want my foot in other places, right? I want to work with teachers. I want to work with teacher education programs, right? Because that's something that really needs to be reassessed, you know, and changed. Like you said, what is the goal of teaching, right? We're at the beginning of our conversation, you know, and that happens in teachers' college, right? So for me, I want to be in those areas too. But if you're not happy, you have to kind of get out of your comfort zone. I've been one of those that is constantly changing. I'm changing schools, I'm changing roles. You know, I was telling somebody last year who was complaining about, oh, I have to switch classrooms. And I'm like, I think I'm on year 12 of having to move and pack up my stuff, even if I'm still in the same building. Maybe I'm always doing something different. And it's not that I don't enjoy it. It's just, I like learning and I like doing different things. So it's definitely finding that. But for me, I still have other passions, even outside of, the business here. It is working at, you know, perhaps university or creating courses for teacher, working with new teachers, because really that's who's coming in the door. That's who we should be really helping and wanting to keep them in the industry, because it's tough. It's tough.
It is. I just don't know I don't think that K through 12 is prepared and ready for Gen Z and the generation to come behind them, because they will leave a job, right? They don't.
Yeah.
I mean, individuals aside, they don't have loyalty to a company. Like with this great resignation that's been going on, I have seen and I have watched videos of people from people who are making, according to them, I mean, you know, I'm just going to take them at face value, that they are making big money. Like money that I don't ever think I will see from a school district. And they're like, I'm getting calls from my boss on the weekend. I'm getting called past this time. I'm out. Or, you know, or these are the working conditions. I'm out. Like these people are just rolling out. And I'm thinking, wow, school districts, are you ready for a generation of people? And because on top of that, we don't pay well, right? I don't know what Canada is shelling over there for teachers, but I can tell you in the United States, depending on where you live and years of education and degree level and years of education, we don't make a lot of money. And for those who are making that 100,000 plus in, let's say, New York, maybe Boston and California, you're also talking about cities that the cost of living is, you know, ridiculous as well. And so that $150,000 does not look the same in New York that it did if you lived in Mississippi where I live. So I don't know if they're ready because, again, people of, let's say, my generation, X and beyond, those are the, you know, don't come at me when I say this, but those are the soldiers, right? Those are the ones who stay in the profession and they stay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's the younger ones who are like,
No. And we really need to get with it. Right. We, like we said before, what is the purpose of having these students? Right. What are we preparing them for? First of all, we're preparing them for jobs that probably don't even exist right now. Yeah. Right. Like I remember probably 8 years ago, I was teaching second grade and we were talking about, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And one student said, I want to be a YouTuber. And I was like, what the heck is a YouTuber? You know, and fast forward how many years you're seeing people making a living being YouTubers, right? I have a family member who's doing that. And like, you just don't know, but you have to be open to that, right? We can't be stuck in our ways. We have to. And I think that that's probably the biggest problem, I think, is that, you know, if some people are heading into retirement, they don't want to change, right? And I'm 2 years away, I'm not going to change my ways. But that's 2 years of students having to deal with that, right? And you're affecting them. So it is important. We have to be flexible. And it's not always easy, right? And that's why we have to focus on, okay, what's important? We still need, it still goes back to that student and how they're learning, right? And like you said, they can show you how they learn. They can do a presentation when they're in, you know, working at a corporate office. How are they gonna do their presentation? Probably not PowerPoint. It's probably going to be something else that's way more engaging, right? So it's important to kind of keep up with that. It's not easy, but we have to make that effort.
It's different. It's really different. So hopefully, again, the we will do better. We will start to really think about what is the real mission of, let's say, K-12, because higher ed is going through its own growing pains as well. There are universities that are shutting down. There are some that are emerging degree programs being, you know, shut down as well, because, you know, people are looking at the ROI. You know, it's like, oh, I've spent $50,000 on this undergrad degree and I don't have a job. Well, part of that is you spend $50,000 on an undergrad degree, which you need to be a better shopper than that, number right. one. Yeah. But number two, we have to look at, we have to be honest consumers as people. Again, you know, we jumped the shark on this one. But when you are looking at a college degree, you need to find a major that leads you into a career, into a job. And there are degrees that exist. Because again, higher ed was never made for the workforce. You know, it was ideas and research and discussions. And the economy used to be you know, in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, you could get a degree at anything and doors were just wide open. You get a job. But now it's not like that. And so, you know, there are people who get, you know, they're getting degrees in geography and stuff and having hard times getting a job, which is geography. Again, people, I'm sorry. but, you know, every major isn't like education and social work and IT and programming and nursing, where you get those degrees. There is a job like just waiting
right
on you. There is a clear, I get this degree, I get a job. Like the most degrees are not set up in that way. And so, you know, it's, but you know, higher ed is starting to kind of look at itself and say, what can we do to be more workforce ready, more career ready, because they're seeing enrollment drop because folks are saying, why am I going to take on this debt and still not get a job?
And I think one of the things that I think needs to be emphasized is entrepreneurship, right? There, it's not an easy job. It's not easy, but for those students who perhaps higher ed isn't for them, doesn't mean they don't have skills, right? Doesn't mean that they're creative thinkers, right? So how do you help nurture those students who don't want to sit in a lecture hall, who don't want to go to, you know, and learn about different things? Like, how do you encourage them to still be able to live meaningfully and make a living doing that, right? We don't really push the skilled trades anymore, which is unfortunate because that is a booming industry, right? We still have that. You've got to go to university. You have to do this. But no, there might be other routes that might not be as easy. Some might be easier. But I think we have such a narrow focus on what we should be doing when we've got entrepreneurs out there who maybe didn't go to post-secondary, right? We have students who go to vocational schools and learn a trade and are very successful, right? So it's really opening people's eyes to all the ways that people learn and make a living, right?
You're talking to me. You're talking to me. I'm loving all of that, which is what, you know, if you follow me on Twitter and or you listen to this podcast, you know, I've been all in on financial literacy education and entrepreneurship education in K-12. And as in higher ed, that should be taught as well. Some sort of class that should be mandatory for everyone, understanding how money works, your relationship with money, as well as how can you monetize your skills and this degree you just had, right? So you could be, again, you graduated with a nursing degree, and now you're saying to yourself, wow, well, you know, if I, you know, with certain certifications, I could open up a medical spa, or I could open up my own CNA school. Like one of my guests who will be the 600th episode, inshallah, released, has done. Or you could go get your master's, become an NP and nurse practitioner, people. And now you can actually open up your own practice, because nurse practitioners are able to write prescription medications. So you can actually say, I don't even work with this hospital. I'm opening my own clinic. So that whole entrepreneurship piece of how can I not only not limit myself income wise to what some entity is willing to pay me, but actually set my own rules for work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that is, again, super amazing. So it's been awesome speaking to you, Kathy. But before we go, I want to ask you about, what are you enjoying so far on this journey? Because, you know, when people set out to do this, there's a lot of bumps and hurdles and things in the road. And particularly when you're new and you may not be seeing the coin, right? Because some people get into this thing and I know they're thinking, yo, I want that so-and-so money, right? Without me throwing a name out there, I want that so-and-so money because I heard they're making $10,000 a day, or someone is doing this. I want that money. And they may not get that money for the first 4 years or whatever, but when they don't see that consistency in the money, because some folks can be like, that first check can be $3,000. You're like, hey, it's not bad. And you may go 4 months before you see another $3,000 check. Or you may be getting $3,000 checks, but you don't make it to five. So there's a lot of things that's going on. So, and the expectations are a little different. Again, this is different. This is not like the jobs we have now where we show up. And as long as we show up, we're guaranteed to get paid for the time we show up. And that is not the case when you are an entrepreneur. So what are you enjoying thus far? What are you loving about this journey?
I think it's, again, about being reflective. For me, it's just being more confident and learning more about myself and who I am and what I enjoy doing. You know, we talk about sort of this imposter syndrome, right? And they're, oh, I see all these people doing all these great things, but they have so much experience. And they, like you said, they make so much money. They have this huge following. And, you know, but you forget all the steps they took to actually get there, right? We only see sort of the end product, but not the actual journey and the process. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I know that there are going to be people out there who are more knowledgeable, more experienced than me, but I am also more knowledgeable and more experienced than other people as well, right? So I have to remember that. And I have to remember that I do have something of value to bring. And for me, that's been really good at being able to be okay with saying, hey, you know what? I know my stuff. Am I always willing to learn more? Absolutely. I'm always learning. That's my handle. Love to learn, right? Because I do. If I could be a student full time, just meeting these people and joining these groups and talking to so many different individuals and sometimes feeling very inadequate and sometimes feeling like the expert, right? So it's that journey and being okay with that. So that's what I've been really loving about this.
All right. So let's wrap this up by you sharing with us some of the best piece of advice that you've ever heard or received from another entrepreneur. And what is your advice to those educators who are thinking about monetizing their talents beyond their 9 to 5?
It's okay to, first of all, not know exactly what you want to do yet, right? It takes a bit of time to kind of hone in on that. And that's where, again, I talk about making those connections, putting yourself out there. I am not an extrovert. I'm an introvert. But on some of these groups, I've actually, you know, if they're local, I've gone to these meetups being like, what am I doing? I have no idea what I'm doing. But you got to put yourself out there. People are actually wanting to help. They really are. And, you know, I went into a meeting a one time or a meetup and I learned so much. And some people were like, oh, I know a teacher who used to, you know, who's doing this. Let me connect you. Or, I know. Sometimes the connections work, sometimes they don't, but you always learn from them. And it'll expand your mind. It'll give you ideas that you didn't think you had. So I think the more connections you can make, whether it's online, whether it's in person, depending on where you are, find those groups. Join a bunch of them. You'll narrow it down. You'll figure out this group's not working for me, but this one is. I'm getting a lot more connections here, right? And just, you have to get out there. I am one of those that took a while to share things with people, with my closest people. I was too shy to say, oh, this is what I'm doing, right? Because I know I work with so many great educators and I can see them doing the same thing. And so I'm like, well, why should I be doing this? Well, because I am doing it and they're choosing not to, right? So it's just being okay with that. And you just got to put yourself out there. Sometimes you'll get crickets. I've shared my ideas with people and they've been so encouraging and giving me ideas and, you know, telling me connect with this person. And I've heard crickets. And there are times where I just don't hear back. And I'm like, okay, you know what? You're not my people. And that's okay. I will move on. So you got to be okay with sort of that rejection. You got to be okay with putting yourself out there because really at the end of the day, it's about you. Nobody else is really thinking about you. So you're okay with, they're not going to say, oh, Kathy's tried this. She's such a loser because she wasn't able to accomplish this. But then Kathy was able to do this, right? So you just got to be okay with that. And it's not easy. It's definitely been a journey. It's not easy. I'm still going through that, but every step, I just compared to where I was last summer, to where I am this year, there's been so much growth.
I hear you. Hey, yeah. we're all going through it.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to make a pivot myself, and I'm going to actually do a solo episode on that because I got to lean into me at this point, and I haven't been doing that. So I've been living, not a falsehood, but I've been in a space, in an area that I learned a lot, but where I should not have been because it did not align with my core and my passions and things that I am very much interested in doing the work. And again, finding that tribe, that crowd, that people that will champion, right? To champion the work that you're doing. So again, Kathy, I thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Now, people, you know how I do this. This podcast episode is going to be on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Stitcher, Spotify, and Audible. I need you to subscribe and share with your colleagues and others in your network. And though I am on all major podcast platforms, I'm trying to grow on Apple Podcasts. So I need you to subscribe and listen to it, right? Listen, take some notes, but give me a review. Right? Can a brother get some stars and some quotes, some something? Because I'm trying to grow and I'm trying to be found. Look, I need Oprah on the show, right? Oprah, I got 5 guests that are like my all-time greats that I just need to get. So Oprah is my first get. I want Oprah on the show because I want to know that we're doing big things around here. Again, I like to thank my guest, Kathy Fernandez, for coming on and sharing so many gems, and for you for listening to another episode of the Dr. Will Show, the Mobile University for Entrepreneurs. As always, people, invest in you. EDU. Peace.